Shabbat Shalom. Welcome to this week's Living Torah. And before we get to the scripture, I do have a... somebody sent me an email, and I asked him if I could just respond to it here on the video. There's somebody that listens every week. Thank you so much. It says, to the point, I have a question. If we are to go to the camps when the altar is defiled, where does one go? Where does one go if there are no like-minded believers where one lives? Okay. This is a whole, and this is not the only question I got like this past week. I had some different conversations with various people about this, and it's something that's on people's mind because, you know, there's a lot going on in the world right now. Bibi Netanyahu just pulled the ultimate, saying that he wanted elections and, you know, I'm going to close down the government. And you can't, if you've never been to Israel, you don't understand the government system over there. It's really difficult. If you've been to Israel and you've been to the Knesset and you've had it explained to you, you still don't understand the government system. I doubt if Bibi Netanyahu could explain the government system to anyone. It is just, it's strange. It is absolutely strange on a lot of ways. But Bibi pulled it off this week in that he wanted to be a little bit stronger going into whatever's going on with Iran right now. And so he said he was going to call for early elections, and then he said, and then he strengthened his government, kind of kicking Kadima out of there a little bit, and then he said, no, we're not going to have early elections. And so he really came out well. That in itself is really a sign of some things that are going on. And I think that I don't know. It appears that there's some rather interesting things on the horizon right now that could cause some major changes. Let me just say it like that. Not wanting to put any fear. We're going to get into that here in the scriptures this week and next week. By the way, this is just this question just came out at a great time regarding where we're at in Matthew chapter 6. So with that, it's something that a lot of people are thinking about. If you're afraid, if you're walking in fear, well, you need to get that dealt with. But how do I answer this one? Back in the days that I was pastoring a Southern Baptist Charismatic Pentecostal Messianic Zionist Church in North Florida, and was really still, though we were very much heading toward Messianic, was still very much into my pre-trib rapture teaching and theories and all of that. And it was so easy back then to read, you know, Hal Lindsey's book, The Late Great Planet Earth, and all of these, go through Bible school, and they teach you about the rapture and all that. And it was just so easy because all you had to do was just kind of live life and, you know, go to church and pay your tithe and show up on time don't smoke, drink, cuss, or go out with girls. Don't smoke, drink, chew, or go out with girls that do. And if you did all those things, then one day there was going to be a rapture bus, and the rapture bus was going to come and take you away. And, you know, 7-year party in the heavens, and then come back, and the story from there. It was so easy. It's not so easy anymore. And people want to put it into kind of a nice little box, you know, okay, this is what's going to happen when and everything. I just don't see it like that, folks. This question, you know, when the altar is defiled, yes, there's coming a day that the altar is defiled, okay? But then what are you going to do? I think you're going to have to listen to the Spirit. I think you're going to have to listen to His Spirit of what you're supposed to do. Does that mean that you're to go and be with some like-minded believers? Maybe so. Does that mean that you're supposed to just stay at your home with your family, or even if it's just yourself? Maybe so. We look at the scripture, and I just looked at it again this morning in Jeremiah 51, about when we see some of these things happen, let Jerusalem come to your mind. Well, I know where Jerusalem is. I was just there. what's Babylon? You know, is it over the, is it the city in Iraq? Is it America? Kind of looks like in a lot of ways. Is it the world system? And then let it come to your mind. Well, let Jerusalem come to your mind. Then what are you supposed to do? See, we want this box so that we got it all figured out, so that we don't have to think, and we don't have to pray, and we don't have to seek the Almighty on what we are to do individually. And that was one of the hardest things in teaching preparedness through a number of years here, is that people would always come at the end of every single, I think almost every single meeting that I would do. Well, you know, Mike, what am I supposed to do? I don't know what you're supposed to do. You know, I said it like this. When people would, I'm going to just take about 5 or 10 minutes here, not a lot longer, but I say it like this. When, you know, I talk about food storage, and somebody would come and say, how much food should I store? And I'd say, I don't know. And they'd say, but you're supposed to know. You're the teacher. And I'd say, no, here's the question. You just asked me, how much food should you store? Well, I can't tell you that because I'm not you. See, you've got to seek God about what you're supposed to do, not what I'm telling you to do. I may give you some guidelines of what you're to, you know, if you're going to go in this direction, here's some guidelines of what to do. This is some, you know, this is the economical way, and this is the way that's going to work well, and this is going to pan out for you better. You know, we do a lot of stupid things. People at Y2K bought, you know, 100 pounds of grain, didn't have a grinder, and didn't know how to use one. Well, that's not going to go over too well, is it? So I was giving guidelines. But then I'd tell people, you need to seek Him. You need to seek the Almighty of what you're supposed to do. And He may tell you to go out and buy 2 jars of peanut butter. And, you know, you say, well, I've got some extra cash. No, buy 2 jars. That's all you're to do. If you buy 3, you're disobedient. He may tell you to store enough food for 10 people for a year. He said, I don't have any money. He didn't tell you to charge your charge cards up, to charge that up. He didn't say to mortgage your house. He said to do this. Okay, let Him provide and how to do it. But it's, though we are a community, we are a community of individuals. And if each one of us has everything today in a nice, neat little package, all wrapped up with a bow on top, where's faith in that? You say, I'm talking about faith and storing food or storing water or something. It's the same coin, just a different side. See, if we want to say that we shouldn't do anything, and this is where we're going to get into in the scriptures in probably in next week, I believe. But if we're going to say, well, we shouldn't, you know, if doing anything is a lack of faith. Well, then Joseph was a man that didn't have any faith. Solomon spoke of the ant that stored and didn't have any faith. Look at the Proverbs 31 woman who went and she prepared for her family. She's now a woman of lack of faith. The little boy that brought the loaves and fish, his mama was a woman of no faith. No, we've got to get out of this concept that there's going to be, we got to get out of, we may have left the pre-tribulation rapture behind, but I think some of the mindset came forward. They were still trying to figure out exactly what's going to happen. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know what's going to happen. You say, well, you're not much of a teacher. No, well, that's probably about the best statement you can come up with anyway. But besides that aspect of it, I see that in this book and in history, I got my camera a little high today. We have 6,000 years of history that God has called people to live by faith. And we think that somehow, he's going to change for us. That all of a sudden he's going to, I know that the scripture says, I will do nothing unless I tell my prophets. Well, is it that he's telling his prophets the details? Or is he giving them clues? Go back to Noah, a man that had no faith, because he should have just prayed against the rain and, you know, that would have been it, right? I'm being very facetious there. Noah was given what details he needed. He was given clues about what other things, because he wasn't told what rain was exactly. He wasn't told exactly how things were going to happen. He was told what his part in it was going to be and what he needed to do. And so, back to the question, where does one go if there are no like-minded believers? Well, you're probably just going to have to trust him to tell you. Maybe in that day you're going to find that three houses down there's a group of like-minded believers. You know, you've heard me say, you'll perform like you train. And if you're seeking him today, you're seeking his will, his word, you're seeking his spirit, you're seeking his voice in your life today. He's training you today to hear in the small things. I have a feeling that in that day, when it's a little bit bigger, you're going to perform like you train. So, if you're listening today, and you're learning today how to listen, we don't need to be as concerned about the details for the future. We just need to be focusing on him. Okay? Well, with that, let's go to the scriptures. And we're going to go to Matthew chapter 6. It's going to take us probably a couple weeks. We'll be through Matthew chapter 6. And, who knows, by Sukkot, we may be even up to, Matthew 10 or 12. You never know. Okay, in verse 19. Oh, by the way, let's go back to last week just briefly. I didn't really hit this when you fast. Scripture and Yeshua right here just kind of takes it for granted that you're going to fast, that there's going to be prayer and there's going to be times of fasting in your life. There's going to be some things that you need to mix prayer and fasting with. And this is not just for Yom Kippur. You're going through a difficult time. Maybe it's a time to put some fasting in there. But do it in such a way that it is unto the Father, not for everybody else. Give me an example. I was pastoring this church years ago, and a number of us did a 40-day fast. It was just with bread. We ate Ezekiel bread. I used to love Ezekiel bread. It's still today, it's like, because that's what I lived on for 40 days. And we didn't make it a big deal. But, the Almighty was moving in our congregation. We were like the black sheep of the family of all the Baptist churches in our area. And so we did this fast, and nobody really cared, and nobody, as far as the community and the county, nobody, it's just them and they're doing something. Then there was another church that was kind of they were the big dog on the block. And the pastor decided to do a fast, and it became countywide news. Why are you doing what you're doing? Back to that, back to the heart of the issue. Why are you doing what you do? Is it to seek him or is it to seek other people? And that's where the context of this goes right on into verse 19. Do not store up for yourselves wealth here on earth, where moths and rust destroy and burglars break in and steal. Instead, store up for yourselves wealth in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys and burglars do not break in and steal. You never had a, you know, they don't have any security systems in the heavens. Now, this verse, these verses right here, have been used, were used in, I think it was about the 5th century, I can't remember exactly when it was. I think it was the Gnostics, and you have to get some of these guys that remember all that. You know, Eddie remembers all that stuff. I can't remember it all. But they came up with this basic theology, this basic doctrine, that everything of the earth was bad, and everything of the heaven was good. And if we just made it through on this earth long enough, we lived long enough, then we were going to escape the bad of this earth, and we were all going to go to heaven. You know, I'll fly away, O glory. And then we find out after our pre-tribulation rapture bus has wrecked, that not only is there not going to be a rapture, but we're going to end up spending the millennium and beyond upon earth. Wait a minute. Maybe some people got this thing wrong. Maybe the earth is not bad inherently. Maybe it's what man has done to this earth. What man has done through sin. And I'm not talking about global warming and your SUV here. It's what man has done through sin. And that's why things are breaking down today. Because the earth is groaning. The earth is groaning for the Torah to be restored. Because that's what's been gone for the vast majority of 6,000 years upon this earth, is the tree of life. It was the tree of life, which was the Torah, which man said no to, and went his own way with good and evil. And since that time, the earth has been groaning, and literally has been breaking down, and is today right in front of us, breaking down more and more, society-wise and in a natural sense also. So he says in the midst of this, so that's kind of give you an idea of where this scripture has gone, okay? I totally reject that kind of teaching that, you know, of what I just said. What he's talking about here is how you live your life upon this earth. Store up treasures back to his kingdom. Store up treasures that are worthy of his kingdom, that are worthy of his rule, that are in line with his desires. You can go right back to the prayer. Your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Store up in your life. Invest your life in something that he would be proud of, instead of something that the world would be proud of. Investments. And of course, the first thing that somebody says is, okay, you're going to talk about money. No, that's number three on the list, okay? The first thing that I believe that we should be investing in is people. Now, you probably never heard somebody start this verse. Store up yourself wealth here on earth. How do we do that? We do that through investing our lives in people. You know, you can invest in money. You can have all these, you know, the CDs and the 401ks and the stock markets and all those things. And it goes up and down. You know, silver and gold. Price goes up, price goes down. And if that's all you're investing in, well, guess what? You're going to die one day. And when you die, all that you've invested in, all that you've done, all those bank accounts, your children are probably going to spend that all in about 1 year or less, is what I've heard some experts say. They'll spend it all. It'll all be gone. You know, you invest in that big car, that beautiful car. That nice, shiny car, and you go to a Walmart parking lot. So much for the nice, shiny, no dents, huh? Because somebody runs a cart right in the side of it. Somebody spills something on a seat. Moths and rust, and the burglars are breaking in and stealing because we didn't put our treasures into the right area. Where should we be investing? First of all, I believe we should invest in people. You should invest in your family. There's nothing more, I don't think, in this world than investing in your family. Spending time with your family. Getting involved in their life and letting them be involved in your life. Though that's something that will go on forever. You know, I can tell you stories. You can tell me stories of people in your life that invested in you. Oh, I could come up with so many of them right now. Relatives, friends, people at churches I used to go to, my Boy Scout leader, you know, various ones that invested their time in me. And many of those people now are dead, but the investment continues to live on and will continue as long as I continue to invest the right way into my family, into my children, and into people like some of you. You know, it's responding to an email is investing in people. Returning a phone call is investing in people. Returning an email, just picking up the phone sometimes and telling a person, you know, hey, I just wanted to check in with you. And it's investing in people. That type of investment, wow, that is just nothing like it, okay? Because when you invest in people, the rust does not destroy that. The burglars don't break in and steal. The moths don't get it. I know that relationships go sour. But, you know, I'm going to take my chances with that one. Because I've seen in some relationships that when you invest and you invest the right way, that yes, things happen, but sometimes it turns back around the other way. And the investment becomes even more. Number two. Your own driving force. Investing our time, our energy, you know, what is it that drives us? Is it, I guess, probably the best way to teach this is through an illustration. And it comes from some people that many of you are familiar with. I mention them probably all the time. Moshe and Dove Kempinski at Shoreshim. I love to hear Moshe talk his story about how, what was it, 25 years ago, Moshe and Dove had moved back to Israel from Canada, and they opened a store in the old city called Shoreshim. And here's the purpose that they opened that, the reason they opened that store, is, they say, is this, and I sure do believe it. The store was about sanctifying the name of God. It wasn't about pronouncing it right, okay? It was about sanctifying it, calling His name holy. And so they began this store, and everything in the store was about Him, was about His name. Everything in the store had a scriptural basis. There was no, you don't go to Moshe's shop and buy trinkets. Okay, somebody, when I was there the last time, we've been into one of the stores and we bought some things, and you know, it was like mezuzahs and you know, and stuff like that. And somebody said, "Well, yeah, you can buy those trinkets." And I turned and said, "I don't believe the things of God are trinkets." Okay, I take that kind of personal. You don't find trinkets in Moshe's shop. Everything in Dove's shop, everything there is about sanctifying the name of Elohim. And so they started this store 25 years ago, and through some very difficult times, through the wars, the intifadas, they're still there. And they have become a driving force today for the reuniting of this family, of bringing people together, Jew and Christian, together in that store. Now, I believe that their success, they have been able to provide for their families through that store. And I believe that their success has been that they began it with the driving force of sanctifying His name, not their name. They did not begin that store with the idea of, okay, Dove, we need something to provide for our families. Let's start this. Let's open a shop to make money. Do you really think that 25 years later they would be where they are? I don't. Ask yourself, when you wake up in the morning, what's the driving force of your life? Is it to sanctify His name? To glorify His name? You know, as we've been counting the Omer, we're on, what, day 32 today, I believe it is. My prayer every morning, and many times in the evening as we eat, as we have our meal, is that through the day that His name would be glorified. I think that's investing in something. I think that's investing in a place that moths cannot destroy that. They cannot eat that up. Rust cannot destroy that. And thieves sure can't break in and steal what you have done in your life to sanctify His name. Yes, the Scripture is clear when we continue to read that He is talking about money. For where your wallet is, where your checkbook is, where your debit card is, shows a lot about what your priorities. It shows about the driving force in your life. It shows in where your investments are. If you open your checkbook, if you just kind of laid your bank statements out in front of someone, it doesn't take but just a moment to really find out where your heart is. Now, maybe you've been blessed and you own a few things in life. There's nothing wrong with the things. It's what you do with it. If the if your yard is full of all the toys, if your your gun cabinet is full, is full to overflowing, and what would the ladies say? I don't know. Who knows? Got myself in a hole right there. But I believe that the Almighty desires to bless us, but He desires to bless us back to Genesis chapter 12 so that we can be a blessing. You know, if you go out and you buy if I go somewhere here, I'm trying not to get myself in trouble here. Let's say that you buy a new sailboat. Okay, I think I'm safe on that one. If you buy a new sailboat and you buy it just so that you can go and sail around the world, and you can get your name in the Guinness Book of World Records, and you can have your name as one of the people that has sailed around the world, and it's going to be a trip just for you, and you're going to document this, and you're going to YouTube it, and you're going to post it on all these things, you're going to Facebook and Twitter it and all these things, and it's all about you. As opposed to, I know some people, let me go back to an actual illustration. It was a man a number of years ago. He had a neighbor that was into woodworking. This neighbor, and this is in our Christian days, okay, that's okay. And this guy was into woodworking. And so this neighbor was not saved, okay, didn't go to church or anything. And this man just said, I just really want to invest myself in this man's life. I would like to see this man come to Messiah. And so he had no desire of anything about woodworking. But he went over and he started to help this guy in his woodworking. And he said, I'd like to buy some things too. Could you help me and set up my garage? And could you come over and maybe work with me? And so it became this kind of a thing between them, and they built some relationship. And the ending story is, yes, the guy ended up coming to Messiah through that. What was he doing? some people would say, well, you don't have time for that. You just go to the store and buy things, and why are you wasting your time? He wasn't putting himself in the wood. He wasn't investing in the wood or the cabinets or things like that. He was investing in his neighbor. That's what this is talking about. Now, so there's nothing wrong with the stuff. It's how we use it. It's what we use it for. Are we using something to glorify his name? To invest in people? Or is life about us? Is it all about us? You know, we have here, we're doing a lot of stuff as far as gardening goes. And my driving force, besides the fact is I can't stand to pay $6 for a watermelon that doesn't taste, have any taste, and $2 for a tomato that's flavorless, my driving force is to be able to help others possibly. And, you know, help them in kind of making it through if things do go south. Or it's what you do. Why are you doing what you're doing? Okay, and that of course leads us, when it comes to stuff, we got to talk a little bit about money. The scripture is very clear about giving. Now, I've heard all the excuses. There's no Levites. There's no this. There's no that. I had somebody that said, well, when I start growing corn, then I'll tithe on corn because that's what tithing is all about, is corn. I've heard every excuse. Most of them 4, 5 to 10 times, they're all an excuse. It's peanut butter, as we talked about. I talk about peanut butter a lot, don't I? It's all excuses, all right? The Word talks about giving. And where your heart is, your heart, and your wallet, your checkbook, they're tied together. And folks, you know, I can say it, just, and I'll get somebody mad at me, and that's okay. If you're not tithing, you need to look at these scriptures, because we're going to talk about that a little bit more here in just a moment of where you actually are. If you can open your wallet, your checkbook, and there's not giving there, you know, I have, and other ministries do, and this is not just commercial for us. I have people that have watched us, have watched this face, now, crazy folks, for 8 years now, and have never given a dime. You've never sent, you listen to this teacher.